Today it's Gorgeous Escapes and we're talking about Madagascar, the place, not the film. And I'm here with Sarah Tucker, who has just been there, and she's going to tell us all about it because I've heard interesting things about it. I've heard that it's quite hard to travel through, it's challenging, it's brilliant, but you know, it's not a normal sort of journey. Would you say that's right? Hi and welcome.
Hello. It is just come back from Madagascar.
How long were you there?
2 weeks. Mm. 15 days. You need forget about it as a place to drop into. A lot of people think if they go to visit Africa, they think, oh, they'll spend a couple of days in Madagascar. You cannot do Madagascar in a couple of days or even a week. You really realistically probably need a month, but 15 days is fine. And if you choose the right tour operator, I went with Explore, which is superb, but you can go with other companies like Intrepid and Exodus. But I chose Explore because their guides are second to none. They're excellent. And I think if you want an honest appraisal, someone who talks with passion as well as knowledge, you won't find better. And we had a man called Claude who comes from Madagascar and sort of like is an oracle, but also...
Madagascar, though, is the size of England. It's not a small place, and apparently it's very hard to get around. How did you do it all in 15 days, or did you not do it all?
You can do a sizable chunk if your itinerary is good, and this is again why I went with Explore. We went by coach. There was about 10 of us. I suggest if you go within a group, no more than 16, no less than 8. You go in a sizable group. It's not cheap, but I would say it's excellent value for money for what you get. And depending on what time you go, like obviously. See, I went.
Was it rainy season when you were there?
No, it wasn't. It was in the middle of the winter. If you go in the summer months, during the summer months,
okay,
it's
so
winter
middle of winter.
There.
Just say it's August now in England.
It's August now in England. Yeah. So it's summer here, but it will be winter there. Mm. But you know, their winter is very different from our winter. The best way to do it is to go round on bus. Some of the roads, the infrastructure is. In places excellent, in other places very, very challenging, and really realistically you need four-wheel drives. Mm. You can fly. Part of the time we flew on a domestic flight from sort of like the south up to the north, and there are trains that you can go on as well, but the roads are let's say very they're different in different areas. Since the coup, which happened in 2009, a lot of the money that the government has been receiving just hasn't gone to the places where it should have been, to the infrastructure, to even the national parks.
Wow.
And so there's a, you know, there's a political story as well, which...
So it was a French colony, though, wasn't it?
It was a French colony. And actually, Joe, you can see the influence in France, from the minute you get there. The cuisine is very French in many ways. You know, their breakfast, when you walk down a street, we had the pleasure, in fact I'll post the photos online, of walking down one particular town, which was market day, extremely colourful because it was in the east, and the east is cold and wet and the west is hot and dry, and especially in the winter months. You had the women and even the men wrapped up in these very colourful scarves and coats. You know, it was like walking through that Technicolor dream coat thing. It was very, very, so extremely colourful. They are very beautiful people. So it's,
yeah, what do they look like?
Well, again, in the east, in the highlands, there is more of an Indian, Indonesian feel.
Wow.
So their hair is straight, very dark, but their skin is lighter. Mm. In the west, much more African, curly hair, much darker skin.
So they are different tribes.
They have many, many different tribes. There's about 18 tribes, different tribes there. They all have very different cultures, ancestral beliefs.
So interesting.
It is fascinating. But going back to the French influence, the French influence first of all comes out in the breakfast. You've got the baguettes. Everyone eats bread and jam in the morning. They have croissants and pain au chocolat for the tourists, as they would do in France. Yeah. So you would love it. But also there's a very strong, as I said, Indonesian influence, and they eat more rice in Madagascar than they do in China. They eat an
per person.
Yeah. They're sort of like it's an incredible amount of rice that they eat, and you see, especially over in the on the east side, terrace upon terrace of paddy field, and also they're digging up the land literally to make bricks and houses out of them. And you've got the furnaces, which are made out of the bricks that they make, and you can see the furnaces sort of like baking the bricks that they make to make the buildings. But therein lies the tragedy, and therein lies the devastation of the rainforest, because I think if you
there is a rainforest there, isn't there?
There are, but they're pockets of rainforest. Mm. I wouldn't say it's going. I would say it's gone, Joe.
Oh.
There's been a lot of work done by the World Wildlife Foundation, and you know, people like David Attenborough who've gone there. I've met a lady called Patricia Wright who's doing an awful lot of work in some specific rainforests in the East Coast, who's discovered new breeds of lemur. And the lemur do dance, and they do sing, and they do move it.
Are they everywhere?
Well, again, in the rainforests, but actually they like, in the rainforest, they obviously it's the trees are high, and you know, they stay. There's so many different types as well. There's some breeds that are much more, you know, the ringtails, which I think were featured in the film, the animated film Madagascar. They are very, very friendly, and they are more likely to come down closer to you. Other ones stay tall up in the trees, and there's night ones. I kid you not, there is one type which only comes out at night, and it looks like a bush baby.
Oh.
And it is, you know, you love your cat, but it would be a close call. It would, and they sort of like they wrap their tails around themselves. They're monogamous. They sing to each other. They go to each other when they sing to each other. The tribes all get along very, very well. We could learn a lot from them, but as I said, therein lies the tragedy, because they. Cutting down the rainforest for the paddy fields, they're cutting down the rainforest, or they've cut down the rainforest because sapphires have been discovered and they mine for the sapphires. But by cutting down the rainforest, they literally cut families off from each other who can't get to each other by jumping across the trees. Mm. And very few of the actual lemurs, there's a few breeds which I think will survive this because they are able to walk across. But the locals, the Malagasy, are complete contradiction, very, very complex. You know, when you see them, they are smiling, they're genuinely happy, they're lovely people, beautiful people. But some of their traditions, and as a travel journalist, having travelled extensively, I'm always very aware of criticising other people's traditions and ancestry, and looking back at what the ancestors have done, because, you know, look at our own country and the mess we've made of it, and our brutality with colonization, thank you very much. Mm. But they have some traditions which, you know, for example, at the moment, the if they are seen trying to kill a lemur for sport or for food, they are jailed for 25 years, or they are paid to not kill the lemurs. So they still do not understand why it is important to keep the lemurs alive. And
they're just not eco in any way.
But also they don't sort of like, would, you know, a paddy field, a rice paddy field, to cut down a rainforest will feed their family.
So what good
is a lemur? But they're, you know, they're short termist. But to be frank, Joe, so are we in our culture as well.
Yeah. We all drink from plastic bottles
and fly everywhere. And who are we say to go over there and say, oh, please save the rainforest and the lemurs, because we like to visit.
Yeah.
But really what people like Patricia Wright are doing, and also David Attenborough when he made his series, his BBC series about Madagascar, saying that actually the unique selling point of Madagascar is the lemur. It is the rainforest. Once that is gone, they are just another part of Africa. There is nothing that distinguishes them, and that is the problem. You've got sapphire.
There are people trying to stop it, though, aren't there?
People are trying to stop it, but you have a government that is very corrupt. Mm. No money that's gone to the government over the past, well, since 2009 has gone to national parks. When lemurs are discovered and tourists go there, the government finds out, and they tax the area 50% of all their takings. So it's sort of like every which way. And as I said, Claude, he was excellent, our guide. He was telling us all this information, and in the group, we had a zoologist.
Did it make it, though, a kind of sad trip as opposed to, you know, or did you enjoy it?
It is a fascinating trip. As a writer, as an observer, and as someone learning about culture, and it almost like an industrial revolution. I kid you not, it was a bit like some of the landscapes were like looking into Middle Earth. Tolkien, I think, would have rolled over in his grave. Attenborough, when he visited a couple of years ago, sobbed. Because he knew how much rainforest was there. And when he went in and he met a guy called Theo at one of the rainforests who showed us around, and Theo said that, you know, he was showing David around, and he was aware that David was behind him, and he put his hand on Theo's shoulder, and he just turned round, and he said the man was crying, and he said, I realised what this was. I realised where I am now. And he said, this was forest. And such a short time ago, this was forest, and all you could hear was the lemurs singing.
So it's now like, it's like a sort of after the war or Armageddon or something.
It is, as I said, it's Middle Earth. And because the earth is so rich with minerals, when they're digging up the soil for the bricks, it's red. So it's like red raw. With, you know, it's almost like the blood. It is, but as I said, it's fascinating. You know, a lot of the tribes, they create tombs for their ancestors, and they have big ceremonies. And when sort of like the man of the family dies, their bones are put there. But they have very odd traditions as well. Some of them are a little bit quirky. Like when the man of the family dies, his bones are taken into the house, the whole skeleton. And then the brother-in-law can come round, the men of the house can come round and insult the bones. And obviously, when I heard this first of all, I was thinking, no, obviously Claude's got it wrong. He doesn't mean insult. And I said, what do you mean by insult? He said, they can swear at them. And I said, what do you mean? Sort of like, he said, well, no, how can I put this? Have an argument with them, because the men of the house don't have an argument with the other men of the house while they're alive, but they can do it when they're dead. So they insult their bones. And I said, oh, do the women do that? And he said, oh, no, they do it when they're alive, which I thought was quite funny. But
I think it's better being a woman.
I think it's better. Well, that was, she used to say that. But then you see, there's issues with that, because in some of the tombs, and if you're a great man who's had a lot of cattle, a lot of wealth, you know, you can have. There was tombs that we passed which were in the shape of boats, and they were almost the size of boats. So it's very incongruous in this desert landscape to have this ruddy great boat in the middle of this. It was a bit like going back into the, you know, Nubian desert and the Skeleton Coast. But then, then there's a dark side to this as too. There's been a lot of grave robbing, because the Chinese believe, and there's a big Chinese influence there, especially over on the East Coast, that the bones of dead people carry a spirit, a good spirit, a strength. And so people steal the bones. And take, so there's been a lot of grave robbing. Oh, so do you mean, so God. from a documentary perspective, it's very rich. But you know, we were, as I said, there was a zoologist there, where there were animal lovers there, there were historians there, and we were just listening at this and thinking, the level of self sabotage is just incredible. When the man of the household dies, if they have cattle. And a lot of them do have cattle. They have this animal called a zebu, which is beautiful horns, beautiful face.
Is it a sort of cow?
It's a sort of cow. You know, everything, it's rice with zebu or rice with... I'll tell you about the sporting chickens in a moment, and I'll tell you why they're called sporting chickens.
But you eat zebra?
Well, the zebu, it's not a... It's a
zebu. You eat rice with zebu.
I eat rice with zebu. Yeah. And the zebu is done in very different ways. Again, the food is excellent because you have the French connection.
So it's a nice stew.
It's a very...
on daube.
On daube, really, exactly. Yeah. But the problem is that when the man of the family dies, all his cattle are slaughtered with him. Now, this means he could have two cattle, he could have 200 cattle, but it isn't passed down to the sons or the daughters because they feel that they should start again. But then where is the inheritance of wealth? Mm. Where is that they keep themselves in poverty? I know that they say this because they feel that the children should make their own way in life, but it's
illogical.
It's nonsense. Yeah. Yeah. And I think with a lot of tradition, but then who are we to say? Because we have a lot of self-sabotage behaviour as well.
We have to get 40% of tax to them.
Exactly. So actually, by going to a country like that, you realise...
We have to give our money to old people's homes.
Exactly. Yeah. You realise the nonsense of our own culture. And that, I think, is the beauty of travel. Mm. And nowhere, I think, will you see it more clearly than in Madagascar. Also in the trip, and I think this is very important, whether you decide to go it alone or go with a tour operator... Mm. To experience the full gamut of accommodation, because it is only in that way you really experience that, you really have the visceral quality. It's important to have...
Are there nice places to stay? I know I sound very superficial asking that.
And no, you're not superficial, and I know what you mean. I think of travelling 15 days, like we travelled 1,000 miles in 15 days in this. So you will want a touch of luxury. Mm. There's a place called Relais de la Roi, which is on the west coast. It is a hotel that is made out of the cliff face, so it's out of rock. It is very special, very unique. It's 4-star. It should be 5-star. Mm. The food is excellent there. You will be doing a lot of trekking, so there's an excellent spa there. I don't usually recommend having a massage because I usually think it's a waste of
it.
But it's very good as well. It's not just lathering you, in oil. It's very, very good massages they do. Very, very expert. But it's just by what is known as the Madagascan Grand Canyon. And if you've been to the Grand Canyon in America, I think it definitely has the wow factor. I still think the American Grand Canyon has something quite exceptional about it, but this one is incredible. It's incredible, definitely worth going to. There are lemurs there. There's an oasis there, which I put online as well, as something out of paradise, which is totally unexpected. Other place we stayed at was a place, there's some places which are community led, so there's, you know, you share the sort of like toilet facilities, which may not be great for all, but then they provide these dancing and singing, the locals dance and sing, and that's where you get the real African and the African beat is very strong, so it doesn't matter whether you're in the west or the east, the raw quality when you know you're in Africa, when you hear that music and you hear the singing, it's really, really powerful, gets to the soul. There's other places which I would call a very old colonial. We stayed at a hotel called the Victory Hotel and another one called the Camellia Hotel, which were set in gardens, and you could imagine them coming out of something like White Mischief, you know, very old colonial courtyards. But probably my favourite, or one of my favourites, was on the last couple of days. We stayed, I call it on the island, but actually it wasn't. It was just further down the west coast along the Indian Ocean. And in order to get to it, we had to get onto the boat and to actually travel further down. But in order to get to the boat, we had to go on a cart pulled by zebu. Mm-hmm. And it was just a bare wooden cart. And there was four of us sitting just hanging on for dear life. And the noises that the driver was making was like... Sort of a real way, and but
communicating
with the cat. But it was fascinating. And then we went on the boat. We saw whales. You can go snorkeling. You find Nemo. You find Dory. You find octopus. Incredible. And we had huts on the front, on the beach front. Again, there's no hot and cold running water, but what you do have, which I loved, is that they provide you with like a huge tub of a beautiful cold water and some hot water as well, and you sit just like those women do. You sit and you can wash your hair, and you pour they give you a cup to pour this over your head, and you wash your body
and the pan shower,
and it's wonderful. It's wonderful because it's so hot, and it's just so it's almost like if you had a proper shower, it would destroy it. So I hope they never change it. The fruit they have, fruit is excellent. Sort of like you have fruit coming out your ears. Bananas they do big time. Papaya, mango, pineapple, absolutely everything. Their wine, as Claude admitted, is vinegar. I don't know, I never, but because of French influence, they have so much good French
really?
Wine, and they get very good French wine. You can get your
expensive?
You can get your Chateau de Pape. As far as expense is concerned, excellent value, excellent. Like from, you know, if you're looking for souvenirs, they have this beautiful wooden inlaid marquetry. These wicker baskets. Don't touch the gemstones.
No.
Don't encourage it.
No.
There will be children who will be asking for money, but they'll always be offering something in return, like sort of like little clay statues of lemurs and the zebu. They expect you to bargain, but again, you know, their currency is Arioli. I keep calling it Arioli, but it's not Arioli, obviously. But there's about 4,000 to the pound.
Wow.
4,000 to the pound. And you find yourself arguing over 1,000 and 2,000, you know, forgetting that this is 25 or 50p. You know, give them a break.
Sure.
A meal will cost, if you have like three courses and sort of like three, you know, very, very good courses, I would say about sort of like £5-6 a shot. Very, very good.
What about other tourists? Did you see any others, or was it quiet?
Very good question. You don't see any other tourists. The only time you will possibly see other tourists is sometimes in the rainforests, and then again only with specific rainforests. You have something, I don't know whether you've heard the phrase before, lion fever. Have you heard that phrase?
No.
Lion fever is when you have lots of different groups all looking for the same thing.
Everyone's looking for the lion.
Everyone's looking for the lion, but in this case they're looking for the lemur. And if you've got lots of different groups out, when someone spots a lemur, all the groups, all etiquette goes out the window, pushing and shoving. It's a bit
and it
like
frightens
Christmas
them away.
And it frightens them away. And the guides need to be trained, and this is what people like Patricia Wright are doing there, educating the local community, but also educating the guides to be quiet, tell the tourists not to feed the lemurs because they're so friendly anyway, but they're so curious rather than friendly, but they can get socialised very, very easily. So if you hand out banana
don't
to
tame them, no.
Don't offer them banana, just don't do it. In fact, I think tourists should be fined if they do it. I think it should get to that level. Really appreciate, don't wear perfume. In fact, it's better if you smell. I know that it's probably not be better for everybody else to be, but if you all smell, you all smell. Because then you don't, lemurs, just like all the other animals, they recognise scent, or they get distracted by scent as well. So they're, but they stay, as I said, they stay a lot up in the trees. They will come down, and they literally will look you in the eye. I had one as close to you as to me now, looking me straight in the eyes, and sort of like as to sort of like, are you, you know, friend or enemy? Are you competition? You know, who are you? Sort of like. So, and I'm told chimpanzees do
what
that as well.
What other animals? Because obviously it's famous that it's got just things there that we've never seen before. What did you see? You saw the cows.
I saw that the zebus. Zebus are beautiful. You see them all over the place. The other animals, incredible insects. In fact, you get to a stage where you see a twig, and is it a twig? Because it could easily be a stick insect, and you look closer, and it is a stick insect. Then you see dried leaves. Now, there are chameleons. There are geckos that look like dried leaves. We saw the world's biggest chameleon, and we saw the world's smallest chameleon, which, again, was...
They're the ones that change colour, aren't they?
Change colour, but it's... Claude says actually it's nothing to do with their surroundings, it's more to do with their mood. So, which we found intriguing. But it got to a stage we were seeing so many different animals, we were sort of insects and doing genuine safaris about, you know, going this way and that, then coming back, then it felt a privilege to be there, especially. Oh. As it may be, you know, I every year at the beginning of the year, I get press releases from Venice. I get press releases from the Maldives saying, you know, see it before it goes. Mm-hmm. Madagascar, the irony is I've never got a press release from Madagascar. And I think it's the one, you know, island that definitely needed a release like that. But I'm personally going to do everything I can to... bring attention to this. I'm a member.
Other charities people could join or support.
Yes, there's a company called Valbio, which I keep mentioning this lady called Patricia Wright. Mm. And again, be very careful if you want to contribute money. You've got to give it straight to her. Don't go via the government.
Is this her company, Valbio?
This is her. You can take that. I've got a leaflet here, which I can give to you, and you can talk about it perhaps later. And this is supporting the rainforest. Yeah. It's supporting educating the local community to not kill the lemurs, to be guides. Yeah. Because, and once they know that they can make more money on a long-term as well as a short-term basis from this, it will really happen.
Okay, I'm just going to tell people the website they can go to. It's centervalbio.org, which is CENTREVALBIO.org, for more information.
Thank you. No, that's wonderful. And also, I'm a member of the British Guild of Travel Writers, and I have nominated her organisation as sort of like one of the best tourism initiatives this year. So I hope she wins, because she was actually the one who contacted David Attenborough to tell him what had been going on in Madagascar, invited him back, and that's why all the...
Where's she from, Val?
America. And she'd always loved going over to Madagascar, went over there, discovered the lemur, the new breed of lemur, and she says there's other species, which, you know, the one thing that came across, and again, it's quite sad, I think before we came on air I said I might cry, but the lemurs look scared. They look scared. And it may be me just projecting that onto them and my own sadness. But, as I said, that eye-to-eye contact, I had the same sort of thing when I went tiger trekking ages ago with Tom. And there was a young male tiger that came quite close to us and looked. And it was the look of curiosity. You expect a tiger to go, ah, and you expect a lemur to be, because it's all singing and dancing, and there's so much, but they look afraid. And I think they have good reason to be afraid. I'll give you one example. There is a place called Sapphire Town. Interestingly, Claude always said, yes, go out, take photos. If you want to stop, we will stop. And you know, people were, you've got to be sensitive about it, because you can't stop every 5 minutes or anything, because there's another beautiful sunset or wonderful view. And we stopped outside this town, and he said, take pictures here. And the pictures we got were phenomenal. There was by a river, there was all these women, they were washing clothes, but they were also sifting for something. And I said, they're sifting for stones. And they were. It was very, very interesting. And I said, well, can we walk through this town? Because we walked through the other towns. He said, no. He said, we're going to drive quite quickly through it. He said, if we get stopped in traffic, take the photos then. Do not open the windows. Keep the windows closed. Because Sapphire Town, he said, you've got a lot of people coming from outside Madagascar. And as we drove through, utterly fascinating. You had these stalls selling everything from spare parts to spare ribs. You had these stalls selling sort of like these aluminium pots and pans for the sifting, for the dredging.
Why is it dangerous?
You had these gem houses with mafia types with mirrored sunglasses looking out, and Claude said what would happen is that if you got off the bus, you would be pestered about buying the gems, or you wouldn't be able to, you'd want to take photographs. If you took photographs of any of these types, he said you'd just have the phone ripped out of your hand, you're out of your hand.
So they're really dodgy.
He said they're very dangerous. Mm. He said there's lots of prostitutes there now because it's a bit like the Yukon Gold Rush.
Yeah.
You say where there's money, you've got people who mine the people who've got the money. He said you've got a lot of the prostitutes who can't handle their alcohol. They get drunk. Last month, a prostitute burnt down 40 houses because everything's made of tin, everything sort of went up in smoke. Everything was built back up again, and we drove through, and again it was fascinating. But the contrast to the place that we walked through on market day with the colourful shawls and clothes and the people selling bananas and chickens.
So this is like a lawless one-horse town.
Lawless one-horse town.
Sort of like cowboys.
Is very, but really, but then you drive through and on the other side there's another rainforest which is like a dry rain, if you like it, and dry, but it's dry, which is protected by the World Wildlife Foundation because it's got very unique birds and lemurs. Again, fascinating. We walked around. It's more like a rainforest zoo, the way it's sort of like that, because it's such a small park. And they said they're having problems and they need to put guards on because the locals believe that there's sapphires under that land, and there probably is. So what they do, they come in at night and they kill the lemurs because they think if the lemurs die, there's no need to have the rainforest. Oh. Once no lemurs, no rainforest, you can reclaim the land. It's that bad.
And we can support the darling lemurs by going to centervalbio.org. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous, Gorgeous Escapes, talking about this thrilling, emotive and sometimes destructive, I mean as in sad, thing to talk about. But obviously it has to be brought to light, doesn't it?
It does. It's a very worthwhile place to go to. There's an awful lot of beauty. The Indian Ocean is absolutely stunning. I wouldn't recommend it enough. It's fabulous.
Okay, thank you so much. And people want to see more photographs, go to radiogorgeous.com. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure.